most important thing in any company, which is hiring exceptional leaders that will really move the dial. If a process is too slow, you'll miss out on exceptional talent. If your process isn't structured enough, it will give red flags to candidates. If you're not aligned and people are hearing different things from different people in the process about the role or where the company's going, that's a red flag. There's so many things in a process that can put people off that don't need to be there, but it all stems from building relationships and taking the time to show interest and ask questions and care. But none of it guarantees success. This is not a maths equation that, you know, has a definite answer. Until that person is in the seat, you can't be 100% sure. And that is the risk you take with hiring. I've been a headhunter and a recruiter for 15 years, and I still get it wrong myself. It's a really difficult thing to do.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of a very busy period in your life and work.
It is.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you too. And I always say it's better to be busy than bored. I should never complain about being busy. That's a good thing in our world. And it's always good to chat to you, AJ. So thank you for having me.
I always get people to do a brief intro of themselves at the start of this. So what should people know about the infamous James Mantra?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first and foremost, I am a very proud husband to Lucinda and father to Sienna, who are the two most important people in my life. I think it's always good to start there. Often everyone does business first and then they talk about their family or hobbies.
Yeah.
But they're the reason why I kind of do what I do and just why I'm a happy, fulfilled person, because I have their love and they're great fun to be around. So that first and foremost. I'm also the founder of JBM, and JBM is an executive search firm based in London that we basically work with high-growth startups and do all executive hiring, really focusing in on general management, operations, and go-to-market hires. We've been going for 11 and a half years, which is insane. So we've been around the block a bit, and we love what we do. We love all things people, culture, talent. And that really stems from a love of, I guess, a realization that you can really impact people's lives through getting them jobs. So we love what we do. Alongside the day job of recruiting, we also have a podcast called 40 Minute Mentor, which is kind of started as a side hustle and has now become almost like a full-time job in its own right. But that's interviewing exceptional leaders and founders, investors, some Olympians. We just had our first Hollywood actor. And that's all around sharing the power of mentorship and talking through incredible career stories. But not just saying the good bits, but also sharing the challenges overcome, the lessons learned. And the whole idea is around just giving actionable mentorship to our listeners who are often aspiring founders themselves or just aspirational people that we want to inspire. So yeah, so executive search, podcasting, and then outside of work, you know, love my friends, I love sport, I love music, I love food. I'm a people person that gets huge amounts of energy from others. And travel, of course, which I don't get to do as much as I'd like to, but there's many places on the bucket list to visit. So
yeah.
Hopefully lots more places to explore.
Well, still young.
Indeed. Well, spring chicken. Not that young. But
yeah. What is the difference between JBM and a contingent recruiter? And can you explain what a contingent recruiter is?
Yes, of course. So I come from a contingent recruitment background. So the first thing I'll say is, there's a lot of good in the contingent recruitment world. But effectively, contingent recruitment typically is where you are tasked with going out and finding a candidate for a client and you get paid on the successful outcome, which is great. So if you find somebody, if you find, let's say, a chief of staff for a client, then they pay you a percentage of their salary. Now, most contingent recruiters have databases that they built over the years, which they use for to kind of source for candidates. And then they use platforms like LinkedIn and job adverts to kind of attract in talent. So that's great. It can be quite reactive and at times a bit more transactional, because often contingent recruitment is not exclusive and you have multiple recruiters working on similar roles. And so what that can sometimes mean is it is a bit more transactional. And that's why it's an agency model. So there's nothing wrong with that, but JBM is an executive search firm and there is a difference. And I think sometimes in the minds of founders or clients, you need to educate the clients as to what the differences are. So effectively as a retained search firm, we are running the end-to-end process of finding you a leader for your business. And that starts from the very beginning, actually going in and building a relationship, really understanding in real depth your business, your challenges, your culture, where you want to go. You know, there's a whole thing there. So really getting a real understanding of that. It's then about helping to craft the job description and the role. And actually at times have a bit of a real in-depth discussion about what you actually need. And effectively, you know, you're brought in to go up because you are an expert in finding that particular role. And then it's all about running that process end to end in a really strategic way. So we will effectively go out and map the market. So we'll go out and headhunt from relevant competitors and the place that we feel are going to be the place that you can unearth exceptional talent. JBM is maybe a bit different to other search firms because we've also got quite unique partnerships and networks that we've built over almost 12 years. So we can overlay that kind of desk-based headhunting research with high-quality referrals. And so what that often does is it unearths diverse, exceptional talent that's passively looking, and not actively looking. And that's probably one of the big differentiators between contingent and retained search. Is often contingent recruitment is people that are on the market. Headhunting and executive search is all about going to headhunt the best of the best who are often not looking. They're often very happy in their roles, and the art is bringing these opportunities to life and going out and finding the best people for the job. And there's lots more to it. You know, it's a real partnership. A great exec search firm is an extension of the client that they're working with. So when we work with our clients, we want to be so invested in their success. We want to know their business inside out. That when we bring these opportunities to life, we're not selling the dream. We are just excitedly talking about something that we personally believe in. And then, you know, often it's being really honest about the good, the bad, and then working really clearly to a very, very strict assessment criteria to assess, interview those talented individuals. And so we'll run that end-to-end, we'll create that job description, we'll map the market, we'll assess and run that whole process. And then we'll obviously be responsible for helping close that candidate and then managing them through that kind of process thereafter. And that also includes taking references too. So the major difference is often it's about passive and active candidates. There's also a different commercial model. Contingent recruiters get paid on success. Executive search firms get often paid a fixed price with money up front, money on a shortlist presentation, and money on completion. There's lots of differences. Again, there are reasons to use contingent recruiters at certain times, and there's reasons to bring in a retained search firm in others. JBM are brought in often when there is a really high impact leadership role required. So regularly, that's a COO search. So a number two to a founder, absolutely critical role, particularly in a difficult economic climate, somebody to run the business, somebody to improve processes, somebody potentially to own a P&L and drive growth. That is a really difficult but really amazing role. And they need a specialist firm to come in and deliver that search because you can't afford to get that wrong. Hiring a great COO will free up the CEO and founder to play to their strengths and take the business forward. And it will have a great impact in terms of culture and all things. If you get the wrong COO, it can be terminal. So there's a lot of pressure that comes with retained search. You are on the hook for it. And JBM loves that pressure because we get to meet exceptional talent. we get to feel like we're having a real impact in terms of building some of the most mission-driven, fastest-growing companies in the world. And it's our way of leaving our mark. And when you love talent, like I do, and people, there's no better role, to be honest with you.
What a rich explanation. Thank you. We'll go into each part of your process and break it down into more detail. But first, you mentioned something which I wanted to ask a follow-up on, which was when should one use contingent recruiting versus exec recruiting?
Yeah, I mean, typically, often it's to do with seniority or the difficulty of the search or a discrete search. So if for whatever reason, it could be due to fundraising coming in that you can't communicate, you are hiring, you're maybe launching into a new market that you don't want people to know. There's sometimes where there's a very discrete reason why you need to run a search. Potentially it's a replacement hire. And sometimes you bring in a search firm for that where you don't want the market to know, and it's got to be done in very strict, with strict discretion. Other times it's because often contingent firms are used at more junior levels for higher volume roles. And they can be very effective. They can move incredibly quickly. They can give you a wide variety of candidates. And you know, you're willing to pay maybe a slightly lower fee than you would an executive search firm. To be clear, executive search is not cheap, and it's not supposed to be. It's a premium service for what is arguably the most important thing in any company, which is hiring exceptional leaders that will really move the dial. So you don't want to do that for every hire. A lot of companies hire direct. A lot of companies will encourage referrals because that saves money. But there are times where you want to go to specialist contingent agencies who have deep networks, proven expertise, who can bring you fresh talent that are actively on the market, to either complement the internal, the inbound talent that you're getting, or just because you don't have capacity. So you're willing to outsource hiring. Hiring is difficult. So, you know, recruiters sometimes get a bad name, but it's often the most important thing that a company does is getting exceptional talent through the door. So some companies are really good at doing it themselves. Some companies have a brilliant employer brand, which just attracts great talent. Some aren't so good at that. And so sometimes just having specialist recruiters to call on is a great idea. So yeah, contingent recruiters would be used probably for mid-level roles, sometimes junior roles, could be technical, could be commercial. And I guess it's relatively de-risked in that you just pay as and when they find someone. And you can budget that accordingly. So let's just say you've got a budget of, you know, 20 grand for recruitment fees this year, or 50 grand, depending on the size of the business, and you'll budget which ones you're going to do yourself, and you're going to budget which ones you'll use for agency. So it's quite straightforward. When you come to a firm like JBM, it's because it's a really niche, challenging, or discrete hire. So for us, it's not about volume. It's about high impact. And that's going to cost some money, and it's going to take a lot of time. And that's one of the reasons search firms exist, is because it takes so much time to run a really rigorous process that actually, if you can outsource to a specialist firm that can run that process really effectively, you know, source exceptional talent, provide detailed benchmarking insights on the market, and critically, be a really great advocate for the brand in the market, and go out and find talent that if you're in a business, you wouldn't be able to find, because we use lots of different methods, you know, referrals and various others, to really go deep into markets and find people that others wouldn't be able to find. So that's often where we get called in. It's when there's, you know, a really exciting growth phase. Somebody's just landed a big Series A or a Series B, and they're ready to hire their first COO or their first GM to open a new market, or potentially it's a replacing a founder. It's succession planning, which we've done quite a lot recently. We placed an MD to work with a founder, who will ultimately transition into the CEO role. These are big hires. There's a lot of pressure associated on both the candidate and the client to get it right. And they need to be able to put their trust in a company that has been there and done that, that has been there and done it, but critically, who can really be a great partner to them for that search and hopefully the long term. And that's basically at the core of our business, which is building long-term partnerships and being a great sounding board, particularly to founders when it comes to navigating these searches, because they're emotional. They're, you know, when it's your baby and you're bringing in people that are potentially going to have a massive impact on your business for better or worse, you really want to have the right partner for that search. And that's why we spend huge amounts of time getting to know the business, making sure we're really clear, and we've set a really clear criteria for what we're looking for. And then it's really about going out and executing. To give an example, we got flown over to Amsterdam recently by a client. We were running a COA search for a really cool business, Series A company. And we knew instantly that this business, this company, really saw the value of executive search, because they cleared the diaries. And we had the whole exec team. We got to have one-on-ones and group meetings. We went for lunch with them. We had an office tour. We spoke for everybody from the kind of exec assistant to the investors. They opened everything up to us, because they didn't want any skeletons. They want us to really understand the business, the culture, the challenges, what they were looking for. And we came away from that, one, pumped to run that search. It was like, wow, what a cool company. We've been there. We've got a sense of the vibe. But we also have seen some consistent themes around potential challenges, potential, concerns that candidates might have. It's that building that holistic picture meant that we could come away and we're going to be infinitely better when it comes to representing our client to candidates in the market, bringing the opportunity to life. And ultimately, we delivered that search within 3 months. We found an exceptional COO. Everyone's very happy. And for us, it was a really fun search to deliver, because from the outset, the tone was set. They respected us. They understood the value that we brought. They were willing to invest the time in our relationship, and we were doing exactly the same. And everyone had a great outcome off the back of it. So I think it's really important for anyone that's thinking about working with exec search firms to embrace that partnership model and really invest the time up front, because if you do that up front, it will save a lot of time in the long run.
And if we think about assuming someone's about to work with you and they're about to open their doors to you, and you're about to go and talk with the team and interview them, what's the hierarchy or priority of information that you get from that team? That if, let's say, they offered it to you up front in a whole, this is our company, like Google Doc or something, answering a set number of questions, what would be the hierarchy of those things?
Okay, so the way that we would do it is this is kind of a mix of company information and then role-specific information. So first of all, there's a lot of basic points that will help you sell the role to candidates. When it was founded, kind of the funding structure, the revenues, the competition, the values of the business, the headcount, like there's all that nitty gritty information, but it's really important to get that down and be really clear on where the company is at, a bit about the history, a bit about the org structure. That's super important, like where people sit in the org. We go deeper, we try and understand how the different how the different functions are set up. Where are the strengths in those functions? Where are the gaps? We talk about challenges in the business model. We talk about products and services. Depending on the type of organization it is, we want to understand the USPs of the business. We always ask our clients to sell us the business as if you were selling to an investor. What really stands you out from the crowd? We'll want to talk about attrition. We'll want to talk about who are the up and coming talent in the business, who are the high flyers. So we'll talk all about that. We'll then talk about the role itself. So the context for the hire. Why are you hiring, let's say, a COO now? Have you hired a COO before? If so, what was that experience like? What went wrong? Or what were the good bits? We want to go deep into the reporting lines. Who would be reporting into this person? We want to talk about what their core responsibilities are, what their aims will be, or what their goals will be. What would success look like for that hire in 3, 6, 9, 12 months?
What impact are they expected to have across the wider business? What stakeholders will they be facing off to? Like, there is a huge list of things. We want to really build a really detailed picture of what this role will entail. And that really helps. So we're like, okay, we're starting to get really clear on what the brief is, and that will help us shape that job description, that candidate path that we end up creating. So really clear on responsibilities, context, stakeholders faced off to, and I guess ultimately impact they're going to need to have. Then what we'll do is we'll talk about the ideal profile. So that's where we get really detailed around, okay, where do you want this person to come from? What experience do they need to have? And we're talking about sector experience. We're talking about years of experience. We're talking about types of businesses they've worked in. Like, go really detailed. We try and work out what is like a necessity versus a nice to have. We will really dive deep on culture and value alignment and characteristics that have historically worked and, you know, what doesn't and what fits in with your values and your mission. We would talk about target companies. Have you hired from places before that have been really successful? Where are places maybe to avoid that you've had bad experiences? We'll talk about countries that they've worked in or geographies or specific skills and experiences they need to have had, i.e., if they're a COO, are they what type of COO are there? There's so many different types of COOs. Are they a hybrid COO, CFO? Are they a P&L growth focused COO? Are they a kind of more back office process centric COO? Do they need to have a spike to people? Do they need to have a spike to fundraising? Do they need to have a spike to marketing or growth or whatever it might be? There's so many things that you just want to probe and ask. And often we sort of ask the questions, then we'll probe and we'll go deeper and deeper and try to really make sure we've exhausted everything so that we come away from that conversation like with a really clear view of, okay, this is the ideal background of that person. We'll then ask about things like salary and compensation. We'll ask about timeframes for the search. We'll ask about location, working like patterns, whether it's remote, hybrid, etc. And then we'll get on to the nitty-gritty of the actual search itself, the interview process. What's that going to look like? And we'll talk through our advice around how to structure it effectively. We'll talk through referencing. We'll talk through how we're going to work the search from our side in terms of setting up a Slack channel, how we're going to go away and take the information we've learned and create an assessment criteria with the scoring mechanism. We're going to then talk about how, you know, the timeframes for when we go out and going to do the research, when we're going to present a shortlist, when we're going to have weekly calls to kind of ensure a good cadence. And we're basically going to make them, we're going to come away from that conversation with them having real confidence that we have asked great questions. We really understand it and we play back all of this, you know, each section will play back to make sure they really hear that we've heard them. And we'll start to be bringing examples or potentially ideas to the table around, okay, this with this type of profile, is this called calibration candidates? So we'll often bring in some calibration candidates, these early chats, just to go, this sounds like this type of person. Does that sound about right? And try and like start to sort of go have a bit of back and forth to kind of, yeah, get them in the mode of thinking about what good looks like. And that is basically like what that briefing session looks like. Now, what we do that we think is really important is we'll do that with the founder or the hiring manager. But then what we also did with this recent Amsterdam search was we asked a lot of the same questions to pretty much everyone in the exec team. What are they looking for in this hire? What are their expectations when it comes to the background? How is this role going to interact with your function? And like, what are your concerns? And again, we're just building this really beautiful holistic picture. And we'll off the back of that, we'll go create the candidate pack. We'll go create the assessment criteria. And we're like ready to roll because we like have a really clear view of the business.
Wow. That's very thorough.
It's comprehensive. Yeah, it is comprehensive. And I've almost certainly missed out stuff, but it just goes to show, I mean, this is ultimately this is part of what you're paying for. It's that care and attention to detail because, you know, we really want to, you know, you live or die off your reputation in this industry. If you can find exceptional talent and run an amazing process, you know, it goes a long way and founders talk and, you know, you can very quickly become the go-to firm. And that's what we, you know, have obviously worked hard to build a reputation as a challenger brand. You know, we're a small business. But we love what we do, and we try to keep it light and fun and engaging, and we don't take ourselves overly seriously, but we're dead serious about finding exceptional talent. And I think our clients can, I think, hopefully appreciate those two things, that we take the job really seriously. We work very hard, but on the flip side, we're there to have fun. We're there to make it an enjoyable experience for both sides, the candidate and the client. You know, and hopefully we can have lots of mutual success off the back of it.
Very impressive. Very balanced as well, which I love. So we'd love to go into a bit more detail of each part of the process.
Sure.
Can you talk to the candidate pack?
Yeah, of course. I guess everyone in search will probably do this slightly differently. But the candidate pack is a glorified job description. But let's be honest, a lot of job descriptions are pretty crap. You know, it's a shopping list of, you know, what you want. So what we try to do is bring the opportunity to life a bit and bring the company to life a bit. So we'll include press, podcast links. We'll kind of have information that brings, you know, maybe about the leadership, the founders, the mission. Like we'll have some resources for them to check out. We'll then give our own spin on the context of the company and that bit about the history, the context for their role, like why they're hiring this role right now. And that will often include things like funding and, you know, strategy and competitive positioning and why now is basically is selling the dream. Why is this a really exciting time? And why is this a great role right now? And then it will be, I guess, a bit more like a traditional job description in terms of responsibilities and requirements. But we'll try and add a bit more color to it. So we'll put the leadership team on there and the org structure if we're allowed to. And some of this stuff, clients will have different opinions. Some will want it light on detail and they'll want to share some of this at later dates. And some are happy for lots of information to go across. We'll include who their investors are. We'll basically include, we have like a key information slide where we'll have headcount, revenues if we're allowed to share it, funding to date, locations, etc. So that's pretty much it. But it's done in a JBM way with some, you know, color and a bit of personality in there. And then as I said, we'll typically encourage them to anyone that comes into the process to listen to some podcasts, to read some articles, to kind of really be sure that they can get excited about the mission and the business and they really understand the business model. And then that candidate pack really will bring the opportunity to life. But of course, we send that after we've had an initial conversation and we've sort of talked about the opportunity and tried to sell the dream a bit on why it's an exceptional one. And then we'll give them the chance to do their own due diligence. And then if they're keen thereafter, that's when we'll go and do a really deep dive interview where we'll like have our assessment criteria and really dig deep into their experience and see what works and what doesn't.
So can you go into your assessment criteria? Obviously it's different per role, per company, but there's some general principles you bring to defining that.
The key to that is having a really clear criteria. I mean, one of the problems that you can find in recruiting and exec search is when the role is not fully defined and where there isn't alignment across the organization. So one thing we're really clear to do is get sign off on what we're hiring and that everyone's on board with it. And then in our criteria in the assessment criteria we set, we're very clear on, you know, the way we typically split it is into functional expertise, situational, so functional expertise, whether it's ops, strategy, commercial, whatever. And then we'll kind of have different lines on that. We'll then have situational expertise. So this person needs to have been through the series A to B journey or X, Y, and Z. And then we'll look at domain, like the sort of sectors they've worked in and the industries. And again, what's nice to have, what's essential. And then we'll look at the kind of the values and characteristics. And what we'll try and do is, so we'll sort of, within each of those sections, we'll have, you know, extra detail about the different types of business models or whatever. And then we'll have must have and nice to have. And then effectively we will craft our questioning basically focused on those things. And that's just really asking open-ended questions and going deeper and deeper to really understand, you know, what they've personally been responsible for. If it's, you know, if we're talking about a COO skill set, Like what have their COO roles entailed? What have they owned? What functions have reported into them? What scaling journey? Often our clients at the moment are really focused on hiring, let's say, a commercial leader that has worked, has sort of built a function from, a commercial leader that has scaled revenues from X to Y, and sold into very specific types of clients. And so we'll be, we will ask specifically about those journeys, and we'll want to really understand their role within those and the context around that. Often it's very specific to the role, but we'll have some really clear criteria so that when we write up our candidate profiles, we then write them up, and we'll do a brief summary of their background. But then what we'll do is we will effectively write detailed responses to where their relevant experience is linked to all of those core criteria. So there's a demonstrable track record of them doing X, Y, and Z. And then effectively over time, we'll get a clear picture of who has more experience than others. There will obviously be some candidates that spike on, great domain expertise, and have done all the great things, but then actually from a values and culture perspective, would not be as good a fit. And then that's where in our weekly catch-up calls or when we're presenting a shortlist, we're bringing these experiences to life and we're talking through. And it's not always a straight yes or no on candidates. It's about really, that's where your kind of experience comes to the fore, where, you are really talking that through with the client and really challenging them and testing them. Okay, you said you wanted this, but you really like this profile, but they're missing this. So a client might say, oh, I absolutely love that they worked for that brand. You're like, okay, but that's a consumer brand and you've been really focused on a B2B SaaS brand. So why is it you're saying that? And we can often get in some really interesting discussions and debates. And often you realize that sometimes clients need, honing it. You need to keep them focused on the criteria, or there's stuff that we haven't covered off before that's coming up about, oh, but we don't know that they're looking to move into consumer, or they have worked with that brand before and they really like the quality of the people there. So all of these, it's all about partnership. It's all about discussion. It's all about, a two-way conversation. And for me, that's where the beauty of this role is. It's not an exact science. And that's why people are great at selling themselves, right? And so you can do a really good, rigorous assessment, and we can do our assessment. We can present it to clients. But that's where the referencing piece comes in, is it's really important to do thorough referencing, which will help validate some of the assumptions you've made. But none of it guarantees success, to be clear. This is not a maths equation that, has a definite answer. Until that person is in the seat, you can't be 100% sure of the impact they're going to have. And that is the risk you take with hiring. And look, I've been a headhunter and a recruiter for 15 years, and I still get it wrong myself for JBM. It's a really difficult thing to do. But that is why you pay exec search firms who are very good at doing it. But it doesn't mean we'll get it right every single time. We certainly try. But I probably shouldn't say that, but,
it's trust, it's the truth. Core part of the whole people relationship building, totally. Which you are incredible at. So I think it's wonderful that you said that. We'll touch on referencing next, but first, what do you find are some of the biases that come up most often in founders when you're having these conversations back and forth, when you show them profiles and they're like, oh, I love that, and you're like, but you said this and that. Are there anything that feels like you're walking people through this same thought process or reframing?
Yeah, I think it's very easy for founders to look at a brand and go, wow, I want someone from that company, from Uber, from Deliveroo, from, some of the great tech brands of the last 10 years. Rightly so, in some ways. If you've worked to one of those brands, that's probably says something about your capability. But sometimes people that are in a brand now, the people at Deliveroo and Uber now, are probably not going to be the people that were there who helped build it in the early days and were kind of at that like hyper growth moment and were laid the groundwork. And depending on the stage of your company, that's sometimes that can sometimes can be a real problem because you're hiring people that you think are going to be one thing, but they're actually not. And so hiring for brand, a bit like, you know, there's a real trend for hiring McKinsey, BCG or Bain, MBB consultants into chief of staff roles. Of course, they're some of the smartest people around. They have that rigor. They typically are just super intellectually, super intellectual and intellectually curious, and they can learn very quickly. But that does not mean they can operate in a startup, in a scrappy startup. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be hands-on and able to work with limited resources. Now, there are many that can, but there are many that can't. And so, but because a lot of people hire those types of profiles, there can be biases that creep in that those are the people we should hire, especially if they've hired successfully through them before. But we often have to kind of, you know, we have to then make sure they're assessing for the entrepreneurialism, the experiences of, that they have outside of the just core consulting skill set, that will prove or give them a higher likelihood of success. So there's stuff like that. So brand and hiring for that is definitely one. I think other areas would be flip-flopping. you know, I think founders, a good example, we ran a very intense COO search for an incredible business. You know, we're in the last 5 years, they've grown to triple digit million revenue, and we were entrusted, which was a great honor, to find them like the biggest C-level hire they've ever hired. But it was so important to get right because the founder had very high expectations. Chemistry was everything, which is hard to, it can be hard to test for, and they had, there were certain brands they, you know, they really loved, and there were you know, and this person, you know, this founder is amazing, and I actually love them, and I think they're amazing what they do. But when you look at the criteria, when you look at the people that got to final interview, they were, that actually in terms of their backgrounds were all different, which makes for a very difficult search, because there was one that was from a B2B SaaS background, there was one that was from consumer tech, there was one that was kind of a, you know, ex-consulting. And that was mainly because a lot of them had, and what we boiled it down to was they'd all had, you know, scale, like really, they were all exceptional high performers. They'd had a very strong track record of, you know, success in every role they'd been in. Two, they had experienced hypergrowth, and they'd had a very impactful roles in those hypergrowth companies. And then three was this just chemistry fit. And a lot of that came down to an ability to build rapport quickly, but also be vulnerable and be very honest and self-aware. And that was built over a period of time. But actually, if you were to start the search, you wouldn't necessarily have said that that was the profile that we were going for. So that can sometimes be quite difficult when founders... there's this thing that they want and they can't always articulate it. And so when you're putting great people that tick all the boxes in front of them, but they're just like, I just don't quite see it. It's just not quite right. There's something there that makes me think that, and that's really difficult. And that's where you just, by getting to know them more, you can start to understand what it is they're trying to say. But that's frustrating and challenging. And that's where actually really good search firms are not afraid to challenge. You know, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is being very honest and not being afraid to go, well, that is not what we agreed. And we just want to make sure we understand why the candidate that you like does not fit this assessment or criteria, but you think. And sometimes it's sort of like, okay, you're right. We should stick to the brief. Occasionally, the brief flexes. But it's really important for search firms to have control over that process. Because if you, the minute you let it go any different direction and you lose control, you know, it's a nightmare to manage. And of course, what that will end up doing is it gives mixed messages to the market. It gives, you know, it often will make for a poor experience because the candidate thinks one thing and then they're being told something else. And, that can make people upset. So wherever possible, it's important to kind of stick to that brief. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't go that way.
So now we've figured out the role through really understanding the company. We've created this this talent check profile. Yeah, like
assessment criteria.
Assessment criteria. And then you go out and search using your various points of access and your tools. And then you recommend people for interviews. You do part of the interviews yourself.
Yep.
And then there's referencing after that.
Yeah. So we'll headhunt and we'll do two interviews with candidates. Typically, one is more of a conversation and it's part selling the role and part sort of high level assessment. And then a second interview is a much deeper assessment. Then effectively we will pull together a long list of talent candidates, and then we'll present a short list over a period of time. And at that point, we'll then get interviews booked in and we'll manage that process, you know, in terms of collecting feedback and, you know, just running that process end to end. Now, typically in tech, before you get to the final interview or when you're at final stages of interview, the referencing will start, which I guess is different to, what often people think about referencing, which is done once you've got an offer and, you know, now that sometimes happens as well, but in the VC ecosystem, backdoor referencing is prevalent and, you know, it's a bit of a moral quagmire because you have to be quite careful with it. And of course, biases can creep in and you don't always know the context to which somebody is giving you a reference. But my general feeling is that everyone is doing it, and actually candidates should do it as well. So there is this kind of holistic referencing that typically takes place from headhunters and from the client themselves directly. And so that's where, and I've always said, you should not hire or not hire off the back of referencing. It should help validate or challenge some assumptions you already have, but you should be pretty clear on what you're thinking already. And it should basically be baked into a holistic view of the candidate. So there'll be official referencing and there'll be backdoor referencing. And that is typically done in a discreet and careful way, because you of course don't want to alert the candidates companies that they're interviewing or anything. But it happens. And I was quite shocked originally when I realized how big it is in this industry when I was in the earlier days of my career. But it is what it is. And actually, you know, it can save a lot of pain and time and effort in the long run if people don't do that well enough, because it often really helps to give confidence to the decision or potentially offer up areas to still probe and discuss and assess. I think the best referencing will you'll get some interesting bits of potential learning areas or development areas, and that can always be brought into the onboarding process, you know. So it doesn't have to be there's this negative thing that means we don't hire somebody. It's actually okay, there's a common theme here, and maybe that's something that we can work with in terms of when somebody starts a role. There's some stuff to be mindful of, and that being mindful of those things is no bad thing. What you don't want is just somebody that might have worked with someone that didn't like them for X, Y, and Z, and you're like, okay, take referencing with a pinch of salt.
Okay, I've realized we've missed one part, which is the interview process. Okay. And we'd love to touch on that, and then also more specifically what feedback you get from the clients when they've done interviews with people. Like,
yeah,
what does that look like
when it comes to the interview process itself? Obviously, interview processes are, you know, can differ depending on the role and the time frames, etc. But typically, if I think to a recent search that we've delivered, it's been you know, there's probably been an initial conversation with the founder. And like for exec roles, you typically want the founder to meet them pretty quickly, to one, sell the vision, and two, to kind of just initially test chemistry. They'll often be like a much more deeper dive interview with the founder and another executive potentially. And often these processes are two-way. I think that's really important to say. It's not just about assessing. It's also about selling to the candidates. So in exec process, you need to be selling to them all the time. And what's really important with interview process is that it's not just the same questions asked all the time. It's got to be structured to it. It'll typically be maybe a more competency-based interview. There might be a more experience-based and a cultural interview. So it's important for them to meet different stakeholders across the business that will assess on slightly different things, all assessing on, you know, cultural alignment. And then what we always recommend is one, like an investor or a board member to be involved, particularly for a key exec hire. And also for there to be some form of working session or case study. And that's really important because it's a great chance to test working chemistry. It's a great chance to see how people think on their feet, how they present, how they communicate, how they handle challenge, how they, work with different stakeholders, and how they think about the opportunity. And the key to that is not some McKinsey type golf ball in the air brain teasers, but actually something that's based on a real life problem in the business. So you can see how they would tackle it, and it would start to give a really clear view on are they willing to go away and do some real deep thinking on this? Can they bring relevant examples to the fore that show they've really been there and done it? And have they picked up enough throughout the course of this process that they really get the business, that they are really invested in it, and that they can have a genuine impact? And you'll see that very clearly from those sorts of interviews. And then what is often not spoken about is the importance of the informal interviews, of the coffees, of the dinners, of the drinks or whatever it might be, but actually investing time in connecting on a deeper level outside of the assessment side of things. Because that happens from our side and it happens from the client side, because these are massive life decisions. Anyone moving roles at that level is going to be typically in a role that they're probably pretty successful at, and it's a risk. And so, there's a lot at stake. So making sure they're really comfortable, making sure they know the good and bad, what are the challenges? Be honest. I think founders and clients need to be super honest about what any exec is coming into. You need to sell the opportunity in terms of the future progression. So if it's a COO, but could be a successor CEO role, which is, we're seeing a lot of that at the moment, be clear on that. Make that something for them to get excited about without over-promising. Recently a client took the finalist out for dinner with their other half and brought their other half along as well. And they kind of didn't talk work at all, but it was almost like a get to know me on a deeper level from both sides. Get the buy-in from our other halves on each other and sign off, a very important sign off. And I know that from my wife has met all of my team and knows all of my team, but it's important that they often know what works, and there are really thoughtful things, Sandra Schwarzer, who runs executive talent in EMEA for Index Ventures, she's one of my favorite people in executive search. She told me this great example of how one of their portfolio companies had, learned a few personal things about their interests and hobbies of a candidate they were trying to close. They're really into board games. And so they sent them a board game, during the courting process for them to play with their family. Like little thoughtful touches go a long way, I think. And it's those extra bits that will have real impact for candidates, and just giving them the time to ask the questions that they need to, not putting them under too much pressure as well once you get to that stage of offer as well, because that's a big, candidates need a bit of time to process and ask the questions they need to and shouldn't feel rushed. But also it's really important with these search processes, which can take time, to keep momentum going, because that's something like if a process is too slow, you'll miss out on exceptional talent. If your process isn't structured enough, it will give red flags to candidates. If you're not aligned and people are hearing different things from different people in the process about the role or where the company's going, that's a red flag. There's so many things in a process that can put people off that don't need to be there. So There's all these little things that I think are really important to think about before you kick it off. And that's where we come in to try and make sure that all of that is nailed down and everyone's on the same page. And these little extra touches, which we encourage our clients to do, can really help get a top candidate over the line.
Wow. Very slick. I love it. Is there any part of the process that we've missed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the candidate side with the search firm is really important. Oh, no, actually feedback. We didn't talk about feedback. One of the most important things, and we all know how busy life is when you're and interviewing and writing up your notes and, you know, taking the time to do it, especially when you're rejecting candidates. So they're not right for you. It would be very easy just to go, they're not right, and just walk, you know, carry on with your day. But actually it says a lot about the company and how seriously they take people and how long-term they're thinking, you know, in terms of brand reputation and employer brand. It's really important to take the time to give detailed feedback, some development points, something tangible. And particularly for those that are going through the process, any potential concerns or areas you want to probe further, and to do that swiftly. So one of the things that I really pride ourselves on is prepping our candidates well. And therefore I expect relatively detailed feedback from all our clients. And I expect that in a timely manner, because that really helps give a great impression to the candidate that they're willing to do that. And it should be a given, but it isn't always. So that's really important, I think, to give that feedback. And then in terms of how we work with our candidates, for us, it's a partnership as well. It's exactly the same. It's about spending time getting to really know them, not just their skills and experiences and assessing them for the role, but actually their life situation, you know, what's going on, what are they interested in, really understanding what drives them at a deeper level. Because what you don't want to do is take someone through the process that's just telling you all the good stuff and you've not gone deeper and realized that their, you know, their marriage is, you know, breaking down, or their kids have been really all those extra little bits of information, or that they support the same team as your football team as your client and you didn't realize. Trying to find bits to empathize with them, points of in common, to build rapport, because it's all about building trust. And that's what is super important in these processes, is that you're treating candidates like humans and you're really understanding the time they're investing. You're appreciative of that. You just take the time to build that trust, because if you build that trust when it comes to offer time, they're going to be honest with you. And as long as you're honest with them throughout, then there'll be no hidden surprises. And then it's all about managing expectations, and that's about managing expectations on all sides. You know, so I'm a big one for under promising, over delivering. And I think that's really important, not to get too far ahead of yourself. And if you have a really good relationship that you've built from the very start of that process in terms of how you interact with the candidate, then even if it is not the news they want at the end, what you will hopefully have created is a great relationship, an advocate for your brand. So for JBM, I really want anyone to come out of that process, even if they don't get the job, to have had an awesome experience, to feel that they've got good feedback, and that they've had their expectations managed. And that also that they would advocate for us and refer us to anyone and would work with us as a client. So that's the kind of bar you want to set: exceptional service. And one of the bits of feedback we get often is that it feels like a bespoke, tailored service. And the way that we do that is, you know, we have WhatsApp groups with our candidates. We'll send voice notes of good luck and prep, and we'll send podcasts or articles or things that we see that we think might give them things to think about. And we'll follow up very quickly after interviews to see how it went and make them feel good. And, you know, when it comes to offer negotiations, we'll be a really good sounding board for them. It's just about taking the time. And that's, I guess, one of the other reasons why, you know, firms use headhunters. It takes a lot of time to have all these conversations, but it's well worth it, because that's where you build the real great relationships.
Can you give me a rough ballpark of how much time it takes from start to finish? Someone comes to you saying, we need to hire for this role.
Well, these processes, yeah. I mean, I would say we're swifter than most, because we only kick off one search at a time, and we're a small team, but we can really dedicate ourselves to it. So, you know, we try to deliver searches within 3 months or so, as an average. That can be longer. That can be 4, 5, 6 months. And we've done searches incredibly quickly before where there's really tight timeframes. But you're often looking at that sort of 3 months, 3 to 6 months. Often search firms will say 6 months, some are 12. But my view is if you run a rigorous process and, you know, it's top priority, then you can get it done in that time. Obviously, notice periods and, you know, availability and time of year and other priorities can get in the way. But that's roughly what we try to deliver our searches in.
Incredible. You mentioned a lot about trust and building rapport. And I would love to talk on just your perspective of power of relationships and putting yourself out there as a founder, which obviously you've been running JBM for almost 12 years now. Yeah. And I know that you built JBM off 4 relationships and putting talent in teams, but also off the back of the relationships and network that you've built. So can you speak to the power of relationships in your journey?
Yeah. I mean, relationships are everything. So, you know, the backstory of JBM started from, you know, I worked in a big corporate recruiter for 2.5 years, learned lots, got great training. I have nothing bad to say about them as an employer, but I did find big corporate recruitment transactional. I found the kind of focus on KPIs and the kind of competitiveness, even though I'm a naturally competitive person on the sports field, there was a lot of it that I just thought, I just don't think this is for me. And it put me off recruitment. I went into a startup for a year doing business development and quickly got dragged back to the dark side. But when I set the business up, when I did, I was 25, and it was really off the back of candidates and clients that were coming back to me. They were actually asking me, can you help us with this? Can you help us with that? And I was like, I've left recruitment. No. And I ended up starting a sort of recruitment function for the startup I was in. And I realized that one, there was a lot of people in my network that were saying, you know, we would love to work with you. Like, we love your style and the emphasis you place on relationships and, you know, and just the style. So I thought, okay, there's some validation there. Then I realized, well, you don't hate recruitment. You just don't want to do it in that way. And actually, if you were to, you know, it's that whole thing of don't complain about it, do something about it. And I was like, well, okay, well, maybe I've got nothing to lose. Girlfriend who's now my wife, but no mortgage, no kids, not a lot of savings. That was the only thing. And I thought, do you know what? I spoke to a few people, you know, had some great mentors that said to go for it. And I was like, well, do you know what? I'm going to build a different type of business. I'm going to build one that is completely centered around relationships, building long-term, deep, meaningful ones. And I'm going to build something that grows completely organically through word of mouth. And that was always the aim and has always been the case. So 2.5 years on my own, working from my kitchen in Clapham, coffee shop to coffee shop, focused on those first interactions, making a good impression of when hustling to get people to give me work and then working tirelessly and doing all the things I've talked about in terms of going deeper and really understanding values and culture. But it all stems from building relationships and taking the time to show interest and ask questions and care. That's been the heart of everything. And the evolution of the business, we've gone from focusing on strategy and operations and consulting and banking to now an executive search firm in tech. We'd never worked with VC firms before 3 or 4 years ago, and now they're probably our biggest driver of business. You know, we've pivoted continually, but the thing that's been consistent throughout is this mission of like changing hearts and minds about this industry, of going above and beyond for everybody and at the heart of that is around relationships and building trust. And then I guess not being afraid to then ask for favors and pull in those favors when, you know, if, you know, not being afraid to say, look, if you know anyone that would like to work with us, please do pass on our details. Like you've got to not be afraid to put yourself out there. And I love it. You know, I love it. It's amazing. Our job, we are so privileged. It's an unbelievable position to be in, where you get to meet exceptional people every single day. You get to learn about the things that make them happy and passionate and get them out of bed in the morning. You get to place people into roles that maybe they're not that right now, but they desperately want to be. So you get to change someone's life through getting them an incredible job that might get them on the property ladder, that might give them more time back with their family, that might fulfill them intellectually. And that's unbelievable. And it all comes from that belief in the power of relationships. And that really excites me. And that's kind of our whole philosophy across our whole team, is, you know, about having an impact, but really focusing on the relationship first. And if you do that, I think, you know, it's much more rewarding.
What's something that you think you've done that's very unique for you with regards to relationship building?
So although podcasting is very popular now, 4.5 years ago.
What are you talking about? I thought, yeah, I was so niche.
4.5 years ago, in the exact search part, it wasn't a thing. And JBM was at a really interesting point in its journey. We had pivoted the business model to focus on tech. And although we'd been doing that as a smaller part of what we'd done, we were known very much for recruiting into management consulting, into banking, and it was hard to shift that image. And so with that backdrop, and the backdrop of we had restructured the business from 8 to 3 people, been a really difficult time. We had made some wrong hires. We tried to do too much. We were working with too many corporates, and we had this kind of, you know, big moment where we just, you know, almost ran out of money. And it was that like really difficult moment that we took this kind of drastic action. But a big part of that was incredibly freeing, because we realized that the opportunity was working with startups, and that's where we got our energy, and that was where we were at our happiest. So with that backdrop, I thought, well, actually, we are known for the style, you know, we're known for that personal touch, that bespoke service, that focus on building really deep relationships. And that's got us to where we are today. You know, that has had that organic growth story. So I was like, okay, so relationships and mentorship. So one of the things we're also known for is that kind of career guidance, that being that sounding, genuine sounding board, you know, not looking out for ourselves, really trying to be there for people when it comes to all things careers. And talking a lot about the power of mentorship.
Career guidance for these executives that you're placing.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the conversations that we have always had are not with people we can actually help. You know, they are just people looking for career advice when it comes to the CV, interviewing. The problem with the exec search is you can only help a very small number of people. So we talk to people every single day that we just try to help with their careers. And that's always been the case from day one. Because I think it's really important to pay it forward and use the skills you have. So we've always encouraged candidates to go out and seek mentorship. I benefited so much from mentorship, you know, from day one, from the advisory board we set up after a couple of years, which has been so impactful for JBM. So you have this backdrop of sort of trying to change perceptions of who we are as a firm, trying to move towards kind of exec search in the tech world. This kind of deep-seated philosophy within JBM around mentorship and career advice and building relationships. And then the fact that we're like, wow, we know some amazing people. We've had the privilege of working with some incredible founders, and people don't know about it. So we've thought, wow, we'll start one of these podcasts. And to come back to the question, the reason, and I guess why it was unique at the time, is not many people were doing it. But we wanted to use it as a vehicle to get our authentic voice across. Recruiters are great at selling themselves and how good they are and saying all the stuff. But actually, there's a subtlety, I think, to showing how good you are by showing the high quality of guests you can get on a podcast, and then the sorts of questions you ask and the way you ask them, and podcasts shouldn't be, and you're brilliant at this, they shouldn't be about the interviewer. It should, you've got someone on to share their experience. For me, makes me feel very awkward, because I always get massive imposter syndrome talking about myself. But you can still ask, as you do, great, thoughtful, considered questions. And subtly, people are like, you can see how we think about things. And then the other part is we can talk about topics we really care about. Diversity and inclusion, mental health, social mobility, climate. So we're like, we're going to start a podcast. We're going to showcase the exceptional talent that we know and incredible founders. We're going to pay it forward and democratize access to mentorship for those that wouldn't get in a room with a CEO or a founder of a billion-dollar tech company. We're going to talk about things we care about and not shy away from talking about uncomfortable things. We're going to not just talk about the good stuff, but actually how hard entrepreneurship is, what a roller coaster of emotions it is. And I know that firsthand, and try to make it really actionable and brutally honest. And so it started as a side hustle. And the reason it is kind of unique to relationship building is it very quickly became an amazing way for me to build really deep relationships, spending an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes with founders face to face, really digging into their story, their experiences, their culture. Obviously, every episode we talk about culture and hiring. So what it did for me was, one, we suddenly started winning loads of clients off the back of it, you know, and I was like, wow, that wasn't the reason we did it. But a lot of these guests are turning into clients, and they're not just clients. There are clients that I've spent an hour and a half talking to about their business and their culture, and we're on the front foot here. Then some of the guests, two of the guests have become board advisors to JBM and had a actually one was already a board advisor, two became. We have met infinite numbers of candidates through it. And then off the back of it, I guess, as the audience grew, you know, we started to get, you know, real brand recognition. And off the back of that, met many more incredible people. So for us, it was this kind of what felt like a bit of a risk to invest in a podcast. It has become the most powerful tool for us to, one, pay it forward and really help people with their careers at scale. Two, for me to learn from exceptional founders on how to be a better leader. And so it's like my mini MBA. And three, it's been the best way to, we've interviewed over 250 guests, to build deep relationships with people I probably never would have done. Many of whom have become clients, some of whom become advisors, many of whom have become friends, who have all positively influenced my career and the JBM story. So for me, I guess podcasting might not sound like the most unique of methods to build relationships, but actually back then it was pretty unique and it felt like a risk, but it's arguably the most impactful thing I've ever done at JBM.
What feels like a risk now?
Oh, I guess I'm a risk taker historically. But what feels like a risk now? And you know what? I mean, every time you pivot a bit or you go into new areas, you do something slightly different, you know, I guess we can all become quite comfortable, you know, just doing the same old stuff. And so we've always tried to continually challenge ourselves, whether for us, from a day-to-day job perspective, it would be delivering searches in new markets. We've just delivered one in Amsterdam for the first time. We've done France, we've done US, we've done Singapore historically. So that's always a new challenge because there's cultural differences. Sometimes it's like contractual differences. There's a lot there. So that's a small risk maybe. With a podcast, I guess a risk could be mixing up the format. You know, we've got a tried and tested format that people like, but sometimes you need to mix it up to have an even bigger impact. We've talked about taking it more video. It's predominantly audio with some snippets, you know, video clips. A few people have said, you know, the YouTube all of a sudden was starting to get a few more views, and obviously TikTok is a massive opportunity. So that would feel like a bit of a risk because we'd be investing some time, energy and cash into it. And then the other thing would be to be mixing up the sorts of guests we get, and maybe trying to go, yeah, I don't know, broader. We've just done that a bit with a Hollywood actor, which was a bit rogue, but, you know, really interesting. So, yeah, I'm always up for I'm always up for risks, as long as they're, as one of our guests on the podcast said, don't take big risks, take sure steps. And so for me, I don't really think of stuff as a risk. I think of them as learning opportunities. And basically, JBM has been one continual pivot or risk, depending on which way you look at it. Many of those have failed miserably, and a few have paid off and been really important. But I tend to just go for things and not bet the house on it.
I'm doing this for all of the same reasons that you are. Pay it forwards. Like, I loved the YC startup school videos that they did. Nice, and yeah. They haven't, like, they've kind of updated them, but not amazingly. I feel like that was, I loved that when I was like, just starting out. It's my MBA, like, watching these videos back again and again and editing them, like, really drills all of these messages home from people who are 10, 15, 20, 40 years my senior. And I love it. It's so amazing. Yeah. Connecting on a deep level, one-to-one, and really just like being able to be super curious about someone.
Love it. It's creative, isn't it? And I think it's also, one, you honing your interview skills, learning how to ask questions in different ways, listen better, react to things on the fly. Like, these are all good skills to learn and evolve and get better at. And that's what I've found, like, it's given me a lot more confidence in certain ways. And it breaks up the day job. It is, for me, it's a really nice thing to do that's different to running exact search processes. Yeah. So, yeah. But I think it's great what you're doing. And I think, I'm super excited to see all the content.
So, being very cheeky, given that I'm pretty much exactly 10% of the way through the 40-minute mentor journey, and speaking of mentorship, what if, and also the other thing is that this is the day job at the moment.
Wow,
which is amazing.
It's a good day job.
It's an amazing day job. If it works, it's a bit of a gamble. This is kind of betting the house on it slightly. So,
but you've got to bet the house on it in the beginning. This is fine. This is all good.
So, is there any mentorship or advice that you would give me
on the podcast?
Yeah, on my career, like, what is helpful for you to know to then give me good advice?
I often will ask people what makes them happy, what they're passionate about, what gets them out of bed in the mornings, what gives them energy. So you feel free to answer any of these things. And the counter to that, what drains you? What? So firstly, I want to kind of understand, if I'm giving advice to somebody, I really just want to get to know them and understand a bit about what makes them tick. Because the thing is, we can all give advice. But what I try to do is talk from experience. And I think good mentors are not just there to say I did this and that and the other, but they're there to ask the right questions, to get you to think about things from a slightly different lens, sometimes to be challenging and hold your sort of feet to the fire and hold you to account, and but also to share lived experience. And so when my mentees, they're like in the recruitment space, I started quite young, so there were a lot of people who are a bit younger than me in the company I worked for, who then have gone on to start recruitment businesses. And I absolutely loved those conversations when they came to me saying, I'm thinking of going alone on my as well and just wanted to pick your brains, because it was my opportunity to tell them all the mistakes that I made, and just answer any question they had, because I didn't feel like I had that. And this is probably another reason why mentorship is just for me so important. So to come back to you, I mean, I don't necessarily feel equipped to mentor you, AJ. There's many more people that we both know who would give you much better mentorship, but maybe on the podcast side of things, and I know you're doing this already, so this is probably a bit pointless. For me, it's all about quality and authenticity. Because what you find, I find with a lot of podcasts is, you know, they start strong, they have a few guests, and then they're either trying just to churn out content and the quality dips, or it becomes about clickbaity stuff. And it's like, the best content for me is like, is where it's like tangible and there's tangible outcomes. There's stuff you can really, you can either be really inspired by, you can learn a lot from, or be really entertained by. And I think what we've learned from our podcast journey is, you know, keep the bar high when it comes to quality of guests, who can be all of those things, hopefully. Be consistent in terms of same time, weekly, and all that good stuff, which, as somebody's talked about, you only have four podcasts, and if, you know, most people would really just list to four, and if you stop posting at the same time, another one will come and it'll be very hard to get into that four slot. And enjoy it. Like, that's for me, there have probably been times where I've sort of been stressed with the podcast because it's just like been all encompassing, but I do really enjoy it. And I think, knowing it as I do, you'll do all of those things, and you'll probably, I know you're already doing them all, so it's pretty pointless feedback, but
really helpful.
Or mentorship, but no, yeah, when it comes to just broadly giving mentorship, I try to just find out more about that person. And mentorship is not mentorship comes in many forms. So podcast, for me, what you're doing and what we've done with 42-Minute Mentor, that is a form of mentorship. Not everybody wants to get a formal mentor and sit in a room for an hour every 3 weeks or whatever it might be. Mentorship does come in lots of different forms, and I think it's really important to work out what you need. And you can access mentorship in so many different forms. Like, you can have an official one, an unofficial one. You can get it from your uncle, you know, your former boss, you know, it doesn't really matter. And I think in many ways, the more mentors, the better.
Very helpful. Thank you so much for that. It's always a good reminder. And although we don't have time to go into all of the questions of what gets me out of bed and what energizes me, this is helpful and good reflections for me to go and journal on, I think. Yes. Now, I'm conscious of your time. So cool. I've got one more question for you.
Cool.
You're going through an interesting period with JBM. Confidentiality reasons, don't expect you to share any details, but I'm more interested in, who do you plan to be in this next phase of JBM?
Great question. Who do I plan to be? Anybody that knows me will know that I'm a very optimistic, positive person. And I am. But like all founders, there have been difficult times. I've talked about some of them today. And the last year has been pretty brutal in terms of, you know, difficult economy. We've had to let people go, which is by far and away the worst thing that I've ever done. I've unfortunately, like a lot of small business owners, had to let go of people over the years. And I've always been very proud of the fact we've done that in as a human a way as possible, and tried to, you know, leave on great terms with anyone that's left JBM and really done our utmost to help them. And thankfully that's been the case this year, in you know, on great terms with everybody. And it's amazing to see JBM alumni go on to incredible things, but it takes its toll. And I've definitely found in the last year there's been some exhausting moments, and probably teetering on some burnout, which I had always thought to myself I wouldn't do to myself again. So in the year ahead, which I am really excited about, there's lots of exciting things on the horizon. We're working on some epic searches that we've just won. The team is a bit smaller, but tiny and mighty, and you know, super high quality. I guess what I want to do is really focus on enjoying the ride, and being kind to myself about the fact that I've been here and done it, and sometimes reminding myself how experienced I am, and that I can handle these difficult patches, which often do. I deeply and overthink a lot about it and probably catastrophize a bit when we're going through these difficult times. But I think I'm old enough and ugly enough and to actually step back more and be proud of what we've achieved, but also be really bullish and confident about where we're going. And I really am excited about the next year or two ahead, because I think we've got to a point where we have a really strong reputation in the startup space for being a, you know, a great search firm, very founder friendly. We really, we've got a great team. We've got a podcast that has real impact. We have changed a lot of lives for the better in terms of, you know, the work we do, the placements we've made, and through the mentorship we've kind of promoted. And yeah, I think I just being a bit like, I think taking more time to celebrate the wins and, you know, not beat myself up too much, that's pretty important. And alongside that, and it's very much linked to that, is making sure I, you know, looking after my mental and physical health, you know, continuing to work out, eat well, which these are the things that go by the wayside when I'm stressed. And critically, make sure those boundaries that I set a few years ago after the pandemic are very much in place when it comes to spending quality time with my family. You know, I used to commute pretty much 5 days a week and work ludicrous hours. I missed a lot of my daughter's early life, really, which is a huge regret to me, especially when I realized in the pandemic that I didn't have to do it. I just did it because of some, you know, age old thing about having to be in the office. So, and after the pandemic, I, you know, where I basically had 2 years at home just with my wife and my daughter. My daughter's now 8, she's going on 9. It's a really important point in her life. She already tells me off for being on my phone too much. So this year, I've loved the fact that for the last few years, I've been able to do the school run 3 days a week and be there for most bedtimes and be super present. So I want to do all those things, achieve our ambitious goals, place the best executives into the fastest growing mission-driven companies, but not for 1 second do that at the cost of my relationship with my daughter or my wife. And actually, for me, that is, yeah, that's the most important thing, finding that balance, because I believe you really can optimize like a great life and a great role. And I think sometimes it's just about being kind to yourself. And that's something that I think I need to get a bit better at, just sometimes going, it's okay and it'll be all right. And it's cool just to take 5.
Wow. I do have a cheeky last question.
Go on. Yeah, mate. I'm good.
What story could you tell yourself about missing parts of your daughter's early life, which is more kind to yourself?
I mean, the story that I tell myself, or try, you know, I think probably the way I justified it in the past was I felt a lot of pressure and a lot of like desire to work really hard to build a business that was sustainable for the long term to help set our family up for life. And as soon as Sienna came along, I really felt that pressure. But that was pressure I was putting on myself. My wife was amazing. Lucinda's been incredible throughout the JBM journey. She's been there every single step of the way, but I put myself under a lot of pressure. And I guess I worked really hard. I don't always think I worked very smart. I burnt out a lot in those years, actually. But you know, those learnings were important in that time. It did help to establish JBM. You know, it's the grounding in where we are now. I learned a lot about what not to do, and the importance of health. And actually, it makes me appreciate the setup I have now so much more because I know what it used to be. So yeah, look, life's a journey. We don't always make the right decisions. And that was a period of time that I was a great weekend dad, but I also worked incredibly hard the business. And I guess we wouldn't be here probably if it wasn't for that. You know, it might have gone a different way if I hadn't have worked as hard as that. I don't know. And I think this is always the thing you wrestle with, right, as a founder, is that you have to work bloody hard. There's no escaping it. And although you want to avoid all the toxic culture stuff and the hustle culture, I think we'd be doing a disservice to founders if we were to say you don't put the hours in and that it doesn't become all consuming, because the reality is it is. And it is now for me, 11 and a half, 12 years on, it still is all consuming. Now I've got better boundaries now. I have great peers and I have a better support network around me. I know myself better. And we are further along in that journey that, you know, I think I can manage things differently, but I still work really hard and it's still, you know, always there because it's your baby and we care so much. I think founders care so much about, you know, why we do what we do. So, you know, that, and I don't think that will change. But I think I can enjoy the journey more than I do sometimes and be a bit, just be, you know, live in the moment a little bit more. You know, I'm often onto the next, and sometimes just take stock and go, wow, look at what we've done. Look at what we've built. Look at the amazing connections we've made. Look at the conversations we've had this week. Look at the feedback that we're getting and how like impactful the work we've done has been, and reminding the team of that. I think that's really important in terms of role modeling experiences and behaviors, that it's good to celebrate success and that we also have to have balance and boundaries. So yeah.
Well, I don't think there's no such thing as right and wrong. I think it's just a thing that humans came up with. It's just what is.
And this is true. This is true.
Stand by is that you are very kind and thoughtful and compassionate. And I'm sure you're very present with your family and your team. And you've been very generous and kind in coming here and sharing your wisdom. And you do have a lot of wisdom. And it's been a masterclass, as well as very heartfelt and authentic. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, AJ, for your time, your great questions and your kind words. They are much appreciated. So thanks for having me. So it's a real pleasure.